In some cases, change happens slowly, and then it happens all at once. And after years of talk, some believe that wind power is now coming. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak, and today our show has its roots in the climate crisis, but the shoots that have come out of that are now creating wind farms, and that will have a major impact across our region. Where will the farms be? How much electricity will they generate? When will the construction start? How many jobs will be created? When will the construction finish? Then there are the environmental concerns, the impact on the fishing industry. There are a lot of questions, and I know you have a bunch too. Please send them to us. If you do it now, I can get them over to our guests. The email is tfs@wshu.org, tfs@wshu.org, and you can leave us a comment on Facebook at Full Story WSHU. But let's start off the program today by talking about what's happening in New York. And then a bit later on, we're going to transition to the proposals in Connecticut. Doreen Harris is our first guest. Doreen is NYSERDA's Vice President of Large-Scale Renewables. NYSERDA is the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. Doreen, thanks for your time today. Welcome back. How are you?
Good afternoon, Ron. It's nice to speak with you again.
Same here, Doreen. Doreen, if it's okay, I just want to start with some basic questions, just to give everyone some background. What is NYSERDA's role in the wind farm discussion?
Sure, yes. And I'm happy to provide some background. NYSERDA is the state agency who has been leading the process to bring offshore wind to New York. As you mentioned, we've been working on this for many years to ensure that the projects that are developed are done so in a manner that is consistent with New York's priorities. So NYSERDA has been working for a number of years in many fronts to make sure that happens across New York and with many other state agencies as well.
So is there a federal component to this that is separate from New York's role, or do you work together on this?
Yes. So offshore wind is actually installed in areas in the ocean that are in what is called federal waters, that is under the jurisdiction of the federal government. So offshore wind development is an interesting collaboration, really, between federal and state processes, whereby the generation projects themselves are permitted by the federal government, but the state plays a role in permitting aspects of the cable landing and the transmission project, and also is responsible for committing to buy electricity from the projects themselves.
Okay, I know we're tight on time, so I'm going to zip through some questions here if I can. How many wind farms are we talking about, and where are they going to be located?
So earlier this year, New York had a significant announcement where we at NYSERDA have committed to contract with two offshore wind projects. This was the single largest renewable energy procurement by a state, actually, in U.S. history. The two projects total 1,696 megawatts. So to give your listeners an idea of that scale, that will power more than 1 million New York homes. New York's broader goal is actually 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind by 2035, which means that these commitments that we have just announced get us about 20% of the way toward our goal.
When will construction start, and when will the farms be operational?
So these two projects, the first project is known as Empire Wind, and the second is known as Sunrise Wind, are expected to be operational in 2024. From the perspective of construction activities, those will commence in the ocean a year or two beforehand. But in the meantime, there's significant permitting, development, and manufacturing activities that will occur across the state.
Why were the areas chosen for the wind farms? What's special about them?
So the areas where these projects will be developed are actually, as I said, permitted by the federal government. They had been identified in what are called wind energy areas over the course of really the last decade, and are areas that are extensively studied for their appropriateness for offshore wind development, both from the perspective of wind, you know, the suitability to install an offshore wind project there from a technical perspective, and obviously a balance of ocean uses in those areas as well.
So if I put it into layman's terms, something I could understand, these are areas yeah. where the wind blows a lot and pretty consistently.
Definitely so. And that's one of the reasons offshore wind makes a lot of sense for us in New York and on Long Island, is because we have the perfect offshore wind resource right off of our coast that can bring renewable energy to the areas in New York where obviously it's harder to site renewable projects on land.
Doreen, how's the power going to get from the farms to land?
So the two projects that I had referred to, the Sunrise Wind Project, will actually be making landfall on Long Island at about the midpoint on Long Island, whereas the Empire Wind Project will bring its cable ashore in the Brooklyn area in New York City. And essentially, there are cables that are buried that connect the turbines themselves, and then one larger cable that brings the power to shore.
The power that comes in, will it mostly be for homes on Long Island or also New York City?
It's actually both. That's the really exciting thing about these two projects, is they balance one another pretty nicely, whereas one will largely provide electricity into the Long Island's market and the other into New York City.
Doreen, can you tell us where the construction is going to be based out of, what towns or ports, and how many jobs are going to be created from this?
Sure, yes. We're expecting more than 1,600 jobs to be supported by these two projects alone. The activity associated with offshore wind development is both across manufacturing, where components of the turbines and the projects themselves are manufactured, the installation of the projects themselves in the ocean, and then the ongoing operation of the projects, which is expected to occur over 25 or more years. So the activities are actually spread across New York State associated with these projects. It's one of the exciting parts about it is that there are aspects of manufacturing that will happen all the way as far north as the Capital Region, and operations and maintenance right on Long Island.
Is there room for expansion for these wind farms, these two wind farms? Can they grow even larger in size and provide even more power?
So New York's commitment is, again, about 1,700 megawatts from these two projects combined. However, the lease areas that the federal government had identified will accommodate more offshore wind projects. And essentially, what it will require is an additional commitment from New York or another state to buy the electricity from them.
So we can possibly see more wind farms sometime in the future, whether 5, 10, 15 years down the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the main objective of this policy, is to bring forth a whole pipeline of projects that can not only serve New York with increasing amounts of renewable energy, but also bring a brand new industry here to New York as well. So we look forward, actually, to establishing that pipeline of projects here for New York, because we believe it will bring the most significant economic benefits to us as well.
Just one final question, if I can, because the segment's about to end. You and I have both heard about the environmental concerns and the worries of those in the fishing industry. They say their businesses and their lives are under threat. Are those concerns being addressed, and how are they being addressed?
Definitely. I mentioned that we've been working for many years to bring offshore wind forward responsibly, and that's one of the reasons that we've been working so long to make this a reality, is because we know that the ocean has many uses, and we know that offshore wind can coexist with those uses, but only if we do so in a way that reflects the input of those stakeholders. So New York is actually seen as a leader in designing processes that ensure the projects that are ultimately developed can do so in a way that is, again, reflective of those stakeholder views.
Doreen, any final thoughts and anything that we should know about what is currently taking place with the wind farms and the projects that maybe I didn't get a chance to ask you about?
I think You know, it's important to note that New York is not alone in advancing offshore wind, although we are clearly leading the way. Our 9,000 megawatt goal is larger than all other states by far, but it is something that many of the Northeastern and Mid-Atlantic states are advancing as well. It's a really exciting new era for renewable energy along our coastline that really we're excited about this broader regional market as well.
Doreen Harris, NYSERDA's Vice President of Large-Scale Renewables. NYSERDA is the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. Doreen, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ron.
And now we're going to spend a few minutes talking about the economic impact that the farms are going to have on our region. And we're going to target some specific communities. Paul Pallas is with us. He's the administrator of the Village of Greenport. Hey, Paul, thanks for coming on today.
Good afternoon, Ron. Glad to be with you.
And Steve Englebright is joining us. Nice to welcome him back to the program. He's a New York State Assemblyman of Setauket. Assemblyman Englebright is the chair of the Assembly's Environmental Conservation Committee. Assemblyman, how are you, sir? Welcome back.
It's a beautiful day. Thank you, Ron.
It is a beautiful day. And I'm going to start with Paul. Paul, because I need to set the stage for some of our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with Greenport. Where are you? How many live in Greenport? And what's the main business there?
Well, Greenport is on the North Fork of Long Island. It's a small village on Long Island. We about 2,500 residents. Right now, there are a lot of, in terms of businesses, Greenport has been transitioning, I think, a little bit into more of a tourist-type economy, although there is still quite a bit of working waterfront-type businesses, marinas and the like, at the present time.
Fishing?
There is a little bit of fishing, some small commercial operations, some independent small fishermen that work out of a small dock that we at the village itself owns.
Okay. And are most of your residents there year-round?
It is transitioning. There are a significant number of year-round residents. There are a number of second homeowners that have been moving into the village.
All right. So, Paul, thanks for that background. Now, with what we know now, what role is proposed for Greenport to play with the wind farms?
Well, in listening to Ms. Harris talk about the expansion of wind off of Long Island, certainly with our deep water port capabilities, we could provide room for support vessels and the like, mechanical support for the wind farms, both during construction and even operation. We had previously been approached several months ago by a company that was interested in just that role. It didn't come to fruition, but the village is certainly supportive of anything that would help expand our working waterfront and revitalize it.
Assemblyman, what are we looking at here? I mean, what kind of economic development are we talking about across Long Island? How many jobs will the wind industry create across the island?
Well, it could be as many as 800 jobs. It'll ramp up over several years, but I anticipate that we'll have at least 100 new and permanent full-time jobs just in Port Jefferson and in the vicinity of Northern Brookhaven, where we're planning to have an operation and maintenance hub established for the pursuing the renewable energy goals of the state and the governor's visionary outlook.
What kind of jobs are we talking about?
Well, it'll be permanent jobs once the wind farm is operational, and that will include everything from warehouse facility, individuals running a operational nerve center for the whole initiative. There'll also be, of course, in the ramp up to that, local construction jobs. Those will be more short term, They'll lead to the establishment of the permanent operation and maintenance hub or nerve center.
Paul, what are residents telling you about all this? Are they concerned, or are you concerned that the industry is going to change the character of the village?
Most people that I've spoken with view it the opposite, actually. Greenport has always been known historically as a working waterfront community. And as I mentioned earlier, the slow transition away from that is something that a lot of residents are not necessarily happy about and would love the opportunity to see the working waterfront grow back to its former self.
Assemblyman?
Yes. Yeah, we of course have a very historic village in Port Jefferson, but it has a history of adapting to changing times. More than 100 years ago, it was an active shipbuilding center in the middle portion of the 19th century, and then it became an oil transportation and gravel industries dominated waterfront site, and then it became a coal-fired power plant site. Today, local tourism is dominating much of the downtown portion of Port Jefferson. But the new wind power economy is a continuation of a tradition of adapting over time. And the historic character of the village has continued through all of these economic themes that have changed over time.
It sounds like you're saying that this is another step in the evolutionary process.
It sure is. And I think a positive one. It also will help link Port Jefferson to our major nearby education institutions for workforce training and preparation of technical skills for a workforce to run this technologically complex operation. We have the largest community college in the state nearby in the Suffolk County Community College campus in Selden, and we also have State University of New York at Stony Brook, the largest university site in the whole state university system statewide. And I think that's part of why attractiveness of Port Jefferson, is enhanced by these nearby job training and educational institutions.
Paul, in terms of what's going on in Greenport, have you heard anything about a timetable?
The only one we heard, as I mentioned earlier, is the one that approached us several months ago. We had hoped to see something happen by now. I don't know the details of because we're working with a contractor of the developer. So it just never came to fruition. But the only timetable I'm aware of is the latest NYSERDA solicitation for infrastructure support, which I believe those are due sometime in mid-November. And we certainly would be interested in partnering with folks to participate in that request for qualifications from NYSERDA.
So you're obviously trying to get whatever information and get moving just in the next few months.
That would be correct. Looking at that at the NYSERDA timetable, that's what it appears. The first step is this request for qualifications that is due, as I mentioned, in mid-November. And then I think there's a subsequent solicitation for the development of the projects themselves, which would happen, I am assuming, in the next several months after that.
Assemblyman, what are you hearing? What's the timetable looking like?
We're looking at mid-2020s, probably by 2024, I think, there should be, an operation that is something that you can point at and say it's generating energy. It'll take a little time to get there, but the planning is ongoing right now, and I think we're looking at a process that'll you know, sort of get us there in just a few years.
So you're thinking maybe
it should be
five
by
years
2024.
By about 5 years from now, it should be up and running.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know you and I have talked about this in the past. Environmental concerns, are they being addressed?
The Orsted Corporation has a biologist on their staff. They have a marine ecologist on staff. They're in constant contact with the marine ecologists and scientists at SUNY at Stony Brook. I think they're trying to address the environmental issues. So they appear to be trying to do this the right way.
Are you talking with anyone who are concerned about power lines coming up into communities, because the cables obviously have to run from the turbines? They get buried under the sea and then they have to come up to land. Has anyone expressed any concern to you about that?
There have been some expressions of concern on the South Fork, and of course, those conversations are ongoing. The Wainscott community has indicated a good deal of concern regarding the proposed onshore site for bringing the cable underground. I think that we should focus, though, on the fact that the cable would be placed out of sight underground. We're not talking about a new power line that you would have to look at or be exposed to the radiation from. But rightfully so, people have expressed concern and want to know the details. Again, though, I believe that the developers are working diligently to make sure that there is no harm to either the landscape or the people along the path of the cable. It's an underground cable.
So do you think that there will be jobs in the future specifically monitoring just the environmental concerns?
I think the future is that we have really a model that's being evolved right now. This is the first time that New York has really had offshore wind, but we're looking at a part of our necessary future if we're going to prevent sea level rise from drowning our communities by the impact of a global climate change, melting glaciers, and if we're going to be responsible and now in accord with our new Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which sets goals for renewable energy in the state, we should lead the way, as New York has often done historically. We have in our new law, which I sponsored in the Assembly, we have a goal of 75% of the energy generated in New York to be renewable by 2030, 40%, and 100% by 2040. So those are ambitious goals, and it's necessary to have the offshore wind component in order to achieve those goals. And failure to achieve them is just unthinkable, given the implications,
Paul, you
the climate implications.
I'm sorry about that. Paul, you mentioned before that there are still fishing. There's a fishing industry in Greenport and the area around Greenport. Bonnie Brady was on with us a few months ago. Bonnie is the executive director of the Long Island Commercial Fishing Association, and she was very upset. I mean, she said our concerns are not being addressed. This is going to impact our industry. It may end the industry. Have you heard anything like that from those who fish for a living?
A little bit. That is something that certainly from their perspective should be addressed. I mean, there's no reason that it can't all work together. I don't believe that one should be exclusive of the other. I think there are ways to work that out. But yes, I mean, answer to your question, there are those that have expressed concern about that very thing.
And finally, if I can, do you have any concerns? Because you do, as you said before, it is transitioning from a fishing village, if you will, to maybe a tourist destination. How would that be combined with a wind farm industry that may be using Greenport as a hub?
We still have a number of areas in the village that could be developed for that purpose. Based on even current zoning within the village, would qualify as the right business for those zones, particularly directly on the water, some fairly large land parcels that could serve in that capacity. And I think it would, because of their location and the location of the way the businesses that are developing now, it would work very well together. I do believe that the both could exist in the village, even though we're very small. I don't see any reason why they couldn't coexist.
Assemblyman, one last question for you before we have to run. Do you see the wind farms expanding over the next 10 years or so? Are we going to see even more of them and bigger wind farms?
I believe we will. I think we have to, for the reasons I stated earlier. But it's within that context that the establishment of the operational and maintenance hub and the operational centers that we're talking about today are really an investment into the very communities that have been at the center of much of our marine heritage over the last 300 years. It's a continuation of a very positive story that is of communities that are making use of the marine environment and continuing to be wonderful places to live.
Assemblyman Steve Engelbreit, the chair of the Assembly's Environmental Conservation Committee, and Paul Pallas, the administrator of the Village of Greenport. Paul, Assemblyman, thank you both. I appreciate it, as always. And we're going to bring in Lars Peterson, CEO of Vineyard Wind. We've been talking about wind power, mostly for New York, but Connecticut is also moving forward with proposals. Three of them have recently been submitted to the state, and one of them is from Vineyard Wind. Lars Peterson, thanks for taking the time today. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Your company was one of the three. What are you proposing to do?
Yeah, so Connecticut has put out a relatively large procurement of up to 2,000 megawatts, and our company has bid in with a number of projects. We have named our projects Park City Wind, Park City Wind being another name for the city of Bridgeport, where not only are we proposing to deliver clean energy into Connecticut, but we're also trying to focus on economic development and rebuilding Bridgeport as a new offshore wind hub along the eastern seaboard.
Okay, where would your wind farm be located?
It will be located in one of two federal lease blocks that are off the coast of Massachusetts. So in the same vicinity as a couple of the other lease blocks that are being bid in various states along the eastern seaboard.
Okay, now are you going to be based out of Bridgeport? And if so, why did you choose the Park City?
Yeah, we are proposing to do a lot of what we call staging, so the preparation of the components that are going to be offshore and also some of the installation to be done out of Bridgeport. And the reason we've chosen Bridgeport is offshore wind is actually, it is a wind project, but it is as much a marine construction project. And for marine construction, you need good access to portside facilities, and you also need access to portside facilities that don't have any overhead restrictions. So these offshore wind turbines are being installed far offshore with specialized vessels that have long legs that can lift the vessels out of the seabed. And if you have bridges in front of the port, you have a difficulty getting the these specialized vessels into the port. And Bridgeport is quite unique along the eastern seaboard as being one of the few ports that doesn't have any of these overhead restrictions. So Bridgeport has a great asset that we want to develop, not only for this project, but also for future projects.
Now, obviously, this would be very good for Bridgeport, but in the past, we've heard a lot about New London and its role in the development of future wind farms. Why did you not choose New London?
Yeah, it's actually not a question of either or. This industry is growing so rapidly at the moment because it is cost-efficient. Clean energy is an energy source that we think will have a great future up and down the eastern seaboard. And even with New London being developed, having New Bedford in Massachusetts, having ports in New York and Rhode Island being developed, we're still short of these ports if we are to deliver on the full promise of the industry. So while New London is great, we simply need to have more of these ports, and Bridgeport is just one of the best assets up and down the eastern seaboard for this kind of activity.
Now, let's say your proposal is approved. When would the construction start?
So we have a couple of proposals in, but end of 2022-23, we would start construction and deliver first power in 24 or 25, depending on which project is chosen.
How much power are we talking about?
So we have submitted proposals from 400 megawatts to 1,200 megawatts, and 1,200 megawatts is roughly the equivalent of 600,000 households that we could power with that wind farm.
So theoretically, in 5 to 10 years from now, your wind farm could be powering up to 600,000 homes in Connecticut?
That's correct. And more 5 than 10 years.
How long do you think construction will take from beginning to end with everything? And how many jobs are you estimating that this will create?
So construction takes 2.5 years from when you start offshore till you have completed the last turbine and put it into operation, and then you will operate the wind farm for 25, 30 years. And the whole endeavor in itself will create more than 10,000 job years. So, you know, years over the lifetime of the project, with a significant part of that centered in and around Bridgeport.
So after the construction is done, how many jobs do you estimate will remain after that to service the farms, the turbines?
Around 100 jobs for the lifetime of the project.
About 100 jobs. So you're talking about for the next 10 to 20 years, 30 years?
25 to 30 years.
25 to 30 years. Okay. Just out of curiosity, you've run into some, I think, regulatory difficulties might be a way to put it, up in Massachusetts. Do you anticipate anything like that in Connecticut, or do you see smooth sailing?
Yeah, so we don't have an issue in Massachusetts. We are very, very close to wrapping up our state and local permits. It's more a programmatic issue at a federal level, where the federal government has said this industry has been growing so fast over the last 18 months that we want to study the cumulative impacts of all these wind farms being proposed. There are a number of stakeholders who have voiced concerns on the industry as a whole, and being the first project in the nation, our Massachusetts project, it will suffer some delays because of this more, I would call it a programmatic review by the federal government going on right now. But we expect that all the concerns can be addressed, and once we get to a project like Connecticut, we don't foresee that there will be any challenges in the permitting process a couple of years down the road.
When you say concerns, are you referring to environmental concerns and those in the fishing industry who say, and they're very blunt about it, they say this is going to decimate our industry?
Yeah, you're right there. There are some concerns that especially from parts of the commercial fishing industry, we think those concerns are addressable, and we're working hard to make sure that there is a coexistence possible between offshore wind and commercial fishing. We deeply believe that that is the case, and we are trying to address those concerns as part of the ongoing federal review, not only us, but the industry as a whole.
Where does this stand now in the regulatory process? What happens next? What's the timetable?
So the federal government is right now developing what is called a cumulative impact study. So not only a study of the individual wind farms like ours, but for a number of wind farms that are being planned. They will conduct this study during the second half of this year. And then at the end of this year or early next year, they will put that out, that study out for public comment. And once the public comment period is completed, they will get back to the our first project in Massachusetts and complete that environmental review. And right now they're saying summer of next year will that review will be completed.
Can you see other proposals for the future in Connecticut, more wind farms, possibly even larger in size? I guess what I'm asking is this just the start of something even bigger?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, and I think it's the right way to think about it. This is not about individual projects. This is about kicking off a new industry. We believe that offshore wind has great potential. It delivers low-cost, clean energy. It can deliver it at scale. And it can also deliver it in an environmentally friendly way where we believe we can coexist with existing marine uses. And then it also creates a lot of economic development benefits for the states that are participating because these components are large and bulky. While the majority of the supply chain sits outside the United States, the scale of the industry now dictates that we need to have more of that happening up and down the eastern seaboard. So you will see ports being developed, manufacturing facilities. So we are much more in the mode of building an industry for the long run than we are about building any one individual project. So it's a very exciting time to be in this industry, and it holds a great promise for the states on the eastern seaboard.
Finally, last question, if I can. Are you thinking of a proposal in New York State in the future?
We were participating in the first RFP that NYSERDA had that was completed around 3-4 months ago, and we definitely want to participate in the next round that NYSERDA will be planning for, hopefully next year. We are keen on participating up and down the Eastern Seaboard on the opportunities that presents us.
Lars Peterson, CEO, Vineyard Wind. Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to wrap up the show today by spending a few minutes with Justin Bellotti, Operations Manager at the Bridgeport Port Jefferson Ferry. Justin, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you.
What are you hearing? People excited in Bridgeport about this?
Yeah, everybody's very excited. Bridgeport, the state, regionally, this is definitely an exciting time for offshore wind.
Have you been pushing for this yourself or your company or your friends? Have you been pushing for this for a while, trying to tell people that Bridgeport is the right place for this?
Well, there's certainly a group, especially regionally, within our parent company, McAllister Towing, getting involved in a lot of the conferences, meeting with a lot of some of the companies that are involved with this work. So there's definitely a lot of us trying to push this ahead as we see it as a great opportunity for a lot of different reasons.
Okay, give me some of those reasons. We have about 7-8 minutes left in the program here, and I want to just really delve into the economic aspects of this. How many jobs would be created? What kind of jobs? And have you had people say, look, you know, I'm counting on this for the future?
Well, there's going to be jobs all across the spectrum, specifically looking at Bridgeport, one of three deepwater ports in Connecticut. Seeing some sort of redevelopment project like this will bring construction jobs, onshore, offshore construction, manufacturing, and where McAllister can really help is the maritime transportation component of these types of projects.
What are they asking you for in terms of support? Have you had to give any documents, studies, do anything, or are you just keeping those fingers crossed that you think that this is going to happen?
Well, we're essentially keeping our fingers crossed, but working with folks like Vineyard Wind, who we have a great relationship with. We've gotten to know recently. We share their vision. We're really excited about it.
You and I both know that Bridgeport has been through some rough times the past few decades, and we've heard about a number of different proposals for the downtown, for the waterfront, for casinos, and so on. What makes you think that this time it's going to happen?
Well, historically, you know, in conjunction with the ferry that's been operating for, over 150 years, the property that we own on Seaview Ave, which we're working with Vineyard Wind on, used to be a banana import destination from South America. So that was once, a weekly arrival of ships. You know, palletized fruit was, Bridgeport was kind of the hub.
And I have to interrupt you for a second. For those who don't know, for many of the bananas for many years that people were getting at the supermarkets, they were coming in through Bridgeport.
Absolutely. And McAllister Towing and the ferry are actually the ones that own that property now. So we're looking forward to working on this project and hopefully putting that property back to work and seeing Bridgeport come back to its, commercial maritime component that it once was.
So will the construction be coming out of Bridgeport, out of the port, and new construction facilities, and then the boats to do the construction in the wind farms will be coming in and out of Bridgeport?
Well, there's all sorts of moving parts for these types of projects. One, with materials coming to the port to get assembled, you could potentially have manufacturing setting up close to the port to, have materials that support this type of work, but tugs, barges, other types of vessels that the panelists are excited to provide can help with, the transportation component for this project.
Have you spoken with any of those in the fishing industry who may be concerned about this? I mean, what kind of a reaction are you getting from the people that you know?
I haven't personally been involved with any of the fishermen locally, but, regionally, just attending some of the conferences, especially, being geographically close to Massachusetts, I've heard some comments from fishermen, but nothing really specifically related to Connecticut.
Okay, now we've only got about 3 minutes left in the program. Can we talk about timetables here? What are you hearing? When will things finally get moving? When will people be hired? When will construction start? If everything goes as some are hoping they will, what kind of timetable are we talking about?
Well, timetable regionally, obviously you have Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New York, pretty much going full speed as well. But with this specific project, I understand that the state will be announcing a winner sometime in November, potentially by the end of the year. So after that, you can envision ports getting, ready for that type of work. So there'll be some sort of construction phase, getting the ports, ready for that type of work. So within the next year, year and a half, you could really see some groundbreaking work.
And will there be jobs? I know the construction will take a number of years to do. Will there be jobs once the construction is completed still in Bridgeport? And what kind of jobs are we talking about?
Well, absolutely. With these projects, again, getting back to the manufacturing component, which could be a tremendous opportunity for the city of Bridgeport and areas that are close to the port. And some of those parts and pieces that are manufactured could end up on some sort of vessel that ends up getting transported to the offshore installation site. And this is long term. So you're going to have a long operation of the maintenance phase afterwards, which is going to employ licensed mariners and technicians to travel back and forth between the offshore site and the port.
So you're really talking about a transformational change around here. I mean, if 5 years from now, if everything moves forward as some are hoping they will, I mean, Bridgeport, the port will look differently. New London will look different. Greenport, Port Jeff. I mean, it's going to be quite a change.
Yeah, it certainly is. And again, you kind of look at the big regional picture. It's going to take a number of these ports to all kind of work together to help support these projects, which, ultimately are fairly far offshore. And it's everyone's very excited, within the city, within McAllister, within the ferries, Inyard Wind, and beyond.
Justin, is there anything that I haven't been asking you that I should be asking about what Bridgeport is doing or should be doing or what you're hoping for the future?
Well, we're all hoping that, again, Bridgeport, can be a viable commercial port to support the offshore wind industry, which was, hopefully right on the cusp of taking off here regionally. And, we're all looking forward to it.
What I found interesting when talking with Lars Peterson, as he was saying, Bridgeport is one of the most unique ports on the eastern seaboard because it has such great access just to get in and out, nothing blocking anything.
Well, that's certainly true, and it's one of only a few ports in the Northeast that does not have any bridges to go under, you know, while coming in and out. So, you know, in relatively deep water drafts, obviously tugboats, barges, and some of the supply vessels can come in and out of Bridgeport with, you know, literally limited restrictions. So, you know, obviously these latest and greatest wind turbines are fairly tall, so being able to have some of these projects in Bridgeport, you know, without having to contend with a bridge is definitely beneficial.
Justin Bellotti, Operations Manager at the Bridgeport Port Jeff Ferry. Justin, thanks. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Be well. That's going to do it for our show today. Sabrina Garone is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Fatou Sangari, Sabrina Garone, Roberto Rojas. J.D. Allen is the producer, and Lopez is the senior producer. And our news director is Terry Sheridan. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of the full story.